Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with jazz trombonist and composer Ron Wilkins on the 2026 album, The Vigil and the Sleeping Giant. Joined by trombone virtuoso and composer Rebecca Patterson, we get into this new album, their history, surviving COVID, and so much more. This album is about many things. Broadly, it explores our perception of the passage of time. We all experience time differently at various moments in our lives, and COVID was an event that dramatically amplified this sensation for people around the world collectively. More specifically, the album tells the story through music of Ron's particularly harrowing experience with COVID. He woke up 32 days later from a medically induced coma. 37 days after that, he was finally able to be taken off the ventilator and breathe on his own again. It's an incredible story of survival, creativity, and tenacity. Enjoy this story. Well, I'm looking forward to getting into the new album, you know, with all the activity that's going on, a good backdrop of how you two got together and started creating. So thank you again for taking a minute out today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, dude. I've been checking you out on TikTok, among others.
Oh,
and
cool.
I love the interviews you're doing. You've got
thank you.
So many great cats coming on, and you just know how to talk shop.
I appreciate it. It's an honor, man. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. I love this art form, and I think it needs to come from you cats. It needs to be your narrative and story, so I'm glad that I can be a tiny part of such a monumental art form that is out there. So,
thank you.
Yeah, you bet. So let's get into it. Let's begin our journey.
Please.
With, as I kind of mentioned, how good it is to talk to musicians now with all this activity. 6 years ago, we look at the calendar now, and this pandemic was really taking hold, melting away itineraries. There was a lot going on. How did you get through that era? How has it influenced the way that you create and do things today?
Well, part of the big part of the story here behind the album itself is how I ended up getting through the era, which actually started back for me by like 2019. I had a booking to go and play a Broadway tour of the show Aladdin in Austin, Texas for March of 2020. And right around November, December, things started picking up with COVID. But we weren't into a full shutdown and all. So it was important for me to still try and make sure I could do that. By the time we got to around February, and things were starting to look pretty crazy, especially since where I was currently living at the time up in Washington Heights, there was a case of COVID that was documented. I think it was like considered to be the first one over at Yeshiva University, which was maybe about 3 or 4 blocks just east of where I lived. So I decided to go ahead and take the gig. It was still on. And I was talking with Becca at the time. We had been doing work on previous gigs, playing off and on with Broadway shows and doing some collaboration on some projects. And I said, look, I'm going to head down to Texas and do this. Hopefully things won't be spreading too fast and too far. And you just, you know, if you need to come down and such, because she's also from Texas. She's got family in around a suburb of Houston called Katy, Texas. I told her that, you know, if you need to come down and such and stay with your folks and get away from this, because, you know, living up in New York City, dude, with so many people, things spread fast. I mean, seriously fast.
Yeah.
So I went down to go ahead and play what I thought was going to be 2 weeks of Aladdin. It turned into 2 days because they shut everything down by that time. My mother, who lives in San Antonio, and I had been talking, and I told her the show's been shut down. I'm just going to come down to San Antonio and stay there for a while and just ride this out. You know, I still have my place up in New York, but let's just see what happens. Little did I know, Joe, that within a month later, I would be the one getting COVID.
Wow.
And man, it just took me out. I was in a medically induced coma for a month. They immediately intubated me when they brought me in. The thing was, I didn't even realize at the time how sick I was, because I just thought it was maybe allergies and I felt a little congested. I was actually, along with a few of my other musician friends, putting together like podcasts and such so we can all keep communicating. Then next thing you know, my older brother comes into the back bedroom where I'm staying at my mom's and finds me just unconscious and hypoxic. So they immediately rushed me to the Northeast Baptist Hospital there and intubated me, put me in a coma, and trached. I had no idea what was going on. But when I came to a month later, and I've got all these tubes and all these machines around me and such, and the doctors are literally saying, man, you don't know how close you were to dying. You have no idea. It was just, there was one moment in particular that Becca had related to me, because once she found out that what was happening to me, she ended up flying down to Texas and staying with her family and checking in with some friends of both of ours that we knew from Austin and San Antonio. Got the information, and bless her heart, she took it upon herself not only to go ahead and just keep folks posted about my status and what was going on, but also then to go ahead and just get together with some of our other musician friends and put together a means of fundraising just to help me to get through this. And she was just a joke. It's an absolute joke. So when I came out of this thing, I had all of these crazy music ideas going through my head. I mean, I don't know if it was the drugs that they gave me or what, to be very honest, but I just had all of these things going on. And they eventually, a few years later, started turning into themes. And then I started actually sketching them out and putting them together into what became The Suite, which is the first four tunes of the album. So
That's amazing.
it's crazy. It's really crazy because I honest to God, I'm one of the fortunate ones, even though in my case, I had a kidney transplant some over 12 years ago. So I'm already immunocompromised. So that didn't help my situation. But what it did do was that I apparently had just this incredible, what they said, strength of will to be able to just ride through this thing. And they blessed their hearts, the doctors, the nurses, and afterwards the therapists all did a wonderful job in helping me to heal and to recover. But man, it was seriously touch and go there for at least a couple of weeks near the end of that time that was in the coma.
You know, it's interesting when I think about this album. You know, there's references to COVID, but it's very clear that it's the COVID suite and you're addressing it. When you look back on what you went through, knocking on, death's doorstep, and then you look at this album being out and everything that's transpired, and you're touring and you're doing things, do you feel like this project is a commemoration of this journey that you've been on? Does it feel good in any cathartic way that this is out and you've survived and you're here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it is a testament of sorts. I mean, what when Becca and I were putting this together and we were talking about the concept behind it. And I wanted to do this COVID suite because I felt like it was important to show things before what was going on during and then after. And then a kind of a resurrection of sorts with the final tune of the suite, The Sleeper Has Awakened. It just kind of puts things into a perspective for me that no matter how crazy and how difficult things can get and such, we don't lose hope. We always have that sense that things can get better. And if we just are able to come together as a people and unite and just look out for each other. It was one of the things I remember about a month or so after I had gone through all of this and I had gone through a lot of physical therapy because honestly, Joe, I lost almost a third of my body weight, being intubated and just laid up. So I had to learn how to walk, talk, the eat. It was crazy just looking at it from the sense that I had to literally learn how to do everything all over again, like a baby. But I still had my mind. And one of the things the doctors also told me was that because of my years of training as a low brass player, I had done a ton of work on breathing exercises. So the first thing that really came back strong was my lung capacity. So I was able to go ahead and just get right back to blowing and such. And I was determined, and I still am, to continue to get better and to improve and to share as much of the music and the passion and the love of it as I can with everyone who's willing to give it a listen.
I love the cover art too. There's such a wonderful convergence of human and city. It's so vibrant. I think about all those early Blue Note albums and the artwork at the American Jazz Museum here in Kansas City. There's a hallway with all of them, and I just love looking at all of the covers. And I find this one and the pantheon of covers to be so arresting. I remember getting this in the mail, and I was like, this is wonderful. I mean, that was my first impression. So what was your thought on the way you were going to visually present this?
Well, the thing is that the cover art is actually based upon a video. Now, here's the quick story. Up here in New York, my nephrologist, my kidney doctor, who's wonderful, has a daughter who is a graphic artist who did her studies in Los Angeles. And she had reached out to me a while back, though my doctor did, about her daughter being involved in music and the arts and creative stuff. And at the time, I was playing Funny Girl on Broadway. So I said, you know what, let me just get her a pass and she can come and hang and we can talk some shop. So I did that. Her name was Ida Lasich. And Ida was just wonderful. Just a wonderful person. Very nice, very congenial. And we talked some shop and I said, you know what, I might have something down the road here for us to work on. And she's like, well, let me know when you're ready. So here I was then a few years later. And when we were listening to the tracks after the recording, we felt like there was some imagery that kept going on with each one of the movements, as well as, of course, with the music that Becca wrote, because her reflection on it was pretty much from the passage of time from the outside, what everyone was dealing with and going through. So we sat back and talked some shop, and she had experience, Becca, that is, in doing his storyboards. So we wanted to kind of put something together in a form of a cityscape, but to have like stick figures that use certain color. So we put this thing together and we presented it to Ida, and she created this incredible animation that just blew us away completely. So we said, you know what? This is not great for a vid, not just great for a video. Let's use this for album art. So that front cover you see there is actually based upon the animated short film, based upon the first tune of the COVID suite, Big City Livin'.
Right on. So I want to go back to the beginnings here. How did you and Rebecca meet? How was this union of music worked? Kind of take me back.
Well, we both came out of Texas, and I knew that I had knew about her from a while back. But as a very talented young musician and such, she had spent some time at the University of Texas at San Antonio before she ended up going up to Berkeley to finish her degree. And by the time I was finishing up with my time in Texas and getting ready to move to New York, I had some friends who were up around the New York and Massachusetts area that I was reaching out to. So I was able to come up. And we were able to connect. She had gotten into New York after her time at Berkeley about some, I guess now almost 12 years ago. And it was right around that time that I had moved up as well. I knew she was there, she knew I was there, but we probably didn't get to actually hang out with each other and start working on performances and gigs and such until about maybe another year or so after that. And it was just this, we saw this mutual collaboration that we had, not only as low brass players, because she's a fantastic bass and tenor trombonist, as well as a doubler on tuba and euphonium. But also she has these compositional skills that I was really impressed with. So we would get together on at times and just have little jam sessions and such. We'd be playing gigs together, working with different bands here in the city. Occasionally, when she'd have a Broadway show, something like that, she might give me a call to see if I could come and sub, or I might give her a call to come and sub. And from there, it just this relationship and this friendship grew into just a really incredible mutual appreciation. And I just respect and admire her so much. She's a great person and just a fantastic musician. And I think for years to come, people are going to hear about her. She's pretty amazing. What she did with the compositions alone between Sulk City, Near East, and Waltz Someday, I thought they're all just brilliant, brilliant pieces. And they're just so poignant in the way that they reflect upon the time that of COVID and even post-COVID. And I just felt like what she had there and what I had there in putting together the suite. And then, of course, the final tune, Like a Brother, which was dedicated to what my best friend from back in San Antonio when we were both in high school together and we grew up together and such. But it just seemed like we had just a great collaboration going. And from there, it just really grew. And then next thing you know, here I am in San Antonio recovering from COVID. And she's there and she says, you know what? I'm going to come and help. I want to come and help you. I want to make sure that you're able to get back up here again and get back to doing the things you deserve and you need to do because, you know, you're who you are and you should be up here. So bless her heart, she has been like my best friend and confidant and just co-collaborator for these last few years particularly. And I am just so incredibly indebted and grateful more so to her for her love and her support and her appreciation. And like I said, Joe, she put together this incredible fundraiser that that a lot of people chipped in on. And I'm just as it was amazing to the point because it was one of those things where we're all online on video and we're all going back and forth. So she got a few of our fellow musicians and artists, people who work with various bands in New York, as well as with the Count Basie Orchestra, and everyone did their own little performance on video. And they put it together. She, along with one of my former voice students, Nadine Mansour in San Antonio. And it was just this beautiful presentation of love and sharing, and people just from New York, I mean, literally to Texas, to around the country and the world, everybody chipped in. Everybody chipped in. And I'm overwhelmed with the support and the love that I received. And in a way, with this album, honestly, it's kind of like paying it back, but it's also paying it forward.
So, what are you hoping the listener gets from this project?
For one, I hope they just really, when they get a chance to listen to it and they see how the album is set up, I hope they get a story from it. They see what's happening from the very beginning of things, where with big city living, it's the hustle, the bustle, the energy, you know, the street life and such. And like I said, the accompanying short film that's on my YouTube channel really, really, you know, exemplifies the music. And then from there into the second movement with the Comatose Dreams and Nightmares, where it's just cacophonic and chaotic and, you know, lots of like different types of tonalities going on, and not to mention the mixed meter that I wrote into the piece. So, I mean, it starts off in this whole thing in six, and then from there to measures of nine, and then from there into the theme, which is in seven. And it's just got some wildness to it, but it kind of takes you on a journey from there. And then, of course, the third movement, Awaken and Hallelujah, where it's like coming out of the dark, and you come to realize that life is so precious and so very important that it's worth celebrating. And then, of course, the final movement, The Sleeper Has Awakened, which is like, all right, let's go. Let's go. And that's where it takes us. And I mean, it's funny because a part of these songs and such is relating across to my childhood and youth as I was growing up, listening to bands like Weather Report, Tower of Power, of course, Dizzy Gillespie, Coltrane. My father introduced me as a young boy to the music of Duke Ellington and Count Basie. So all of these things kind of incorporate into the music. And then from there onto Becca's side of it with Sulk City, where it's literally a reflection of people having to go through COVID and feeling the isolation, feeling like we are, you know, the only way we can communicate is online. And yet you don't get the person-to-person contact, which is so vital and important. And from there afterwards into Near East, which is kind of a mix-up of sorts of this musical style where you get this roaming, loping theme that comes across, and then it goes into swing, and then back to it again. And the use of non-traditional instruments. We decided that when we were going to write this, we didn't want to necessarily just do the standard big band instrumentation or orchestration. So basically, three trumpets, three trombones, and a French horn, and four saxes. And one of the saxophonists, Zach Singer, plays a bansuri flute on Near East. So you got the pitch bending and sets that he's doing with it. He's marvelous. He's just an incredible multi-instrumentalist. Phenomenal saxophonist, also one of the few American players who can actually play and interpret beautifully on a shakuhachi flute. So he's got all those chops as well. But he also plays iwi on the first track on Big City Livin', which is just killing. So he slays it. And then, of course, with the rhythm section, and it's just a loaded band. It really is. I mean, from Boris Kozlov, who's just a legend and an icon in his own right, especially particularly with his work with the Mingus Big Band, among others, or Ray Marchica, who's on drums, Mike King, who's been playing more so off and on, but with working with Christian McBride, and it's just this loaded band of just great cats. And the one of the best things, honestly, about it was, as we got towards the end of the session with all the rehearsals, we only had 3 days rehearsal to put all this together, but we were able to knock it out. We had some great help from our good friend Erica Skeen, who was a fantastic composer and writer and orchestrator. She came in and kind of helped Becca and I to clean up certain things on the parts, as well as then conduct through the session. But man, it was just like everyone to a person said afterwards, this was some of the most fun we've ever had doing recorded music. We just had a blast doing this. When's the next gig?
I love it. Speaking of, if anybody, I know it's streaming everywhere, but if anybody wants to pick up a copy, download it, catch you live, catch you all live, how can they do that?
Okay, you can first go over to either Becca's website, RebeccaPattersonMusic.com, or you can go over to RonWilkins.com,
Okay.
and that will have the schedule of events and such. I mean, between with both of us, between pushing the album and then trying to get more things going here, I'm in contact with the folks over at Dizzy's Club here in New York to get the band in over there, and also looking at a couple of other venues. But then the other side of it is that then we've got all these other things going. Like I said, Becca's currently doing rehearsal right now for a show that's trying to come onto Broadway. I'm getting ready to head out of town to go ahead and do a show here in Philly for a week. And then I come back, and then I'm doing performances with the American Symphony Orchestra Jazz Ensemble for a tribute to Louis Armstrong. And then, of course, there's other things that are going on as well for both of us. So we're both pretty involved and busy. But if you go through the websites, you'll see not only the links to the music itself and how you can get it, with a hard copy. I prefer Bandcamp as well, as if you're going to go ahead and purchase it for streaming, but it's available on the streaming sites as well. Not a big fan of streaming, as I'm sure you know as well. And but it is what it is.
It is, yeah, and that's why I always want to plug at the end and make sure that Bandcamp and those sources are highlighted. Man, it's great to catch back up with you, Ron. Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking a minute out today. It's such a
Joe, thank
triumphant
you.
story. It really is, and yeah, I
I
appreciate it.
thanks, Joe. I appreciate you, man. Have a
Thank you,
good
sir.
day.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview. We'll give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Kansas City, New York City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Ron for coming back by the program. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.